everyone. Welcome to another session of The Notes Between, sponsored by Women in Jazz Media, with myself, Lara Eady, as your host. This podcast, as you know, folks, is focused on female singer-songwriters, and I've been privileged to have some wonderful guests, which, of course, includes present company, today's most wonderful, wonderful, wonderful singer, song collector, composer, artist, activist, Maura Smiley. I am so, so happy to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you. So excited to be here.
Thank you. So folks, Maura has very, very lovingly decided to talk to me early morning in Vermont, all the way in Vermont, right?
Yes, half the world away from Athens, and just so happy to be here in your company.
Oh, I'm thrilled. And I, you know, when I was listening to your music all week, actually, having just gotten back from traveling myself, I just was reminded of your ever-changing nature as a nomadic artist. That's how I would define you. You've just had such an incredible career. You continue to have the most amazing career. Folks who don't know Maura Smiley, she's a singer, composer, song collector, and she sung in huge arenas, cathedrals, kitchens, back porches, sound stages, and on glaciers. And she's performed the likes of Ladysmith, Black Mambazo, Toon Yards, Tim O'Brien, Eric Whittaker, to name a few. And what I find particularly just astonishing about Maura's work is that it continues to evolve. And you're just so freaking modest about it. I think that's the part, really, that I've always, maybe I'm biased, but that's the part that's always moved me. And of course, I should say that her original compositions, choral arrangements, and folk music have literally and continue to be sung by millions of voices around the world today. I mean, who can say that, really? So, thank you. So I'm going to dive right in and I've been trying to figure out if I should ask the big questions later, but you know, you've listened to my podcast, Maura, and I'm going to ask a big question to begin with.
To start it out. Okay, I'm ready. You're ready. Bracing myself.
Let's do it. So you've carved, as I said, a truly special and huge career as a vocalist and composer. And I wonder if there was a defining moment or moments for you where you realized you wanted to evolve as an artist, having come from having studied early medieval music. I wonder if there was a moment that made you become you.
I think the moments keep happening as we find that we are alive in what we're doing. And I think the evolution has been a combination that has shocked me in the last decade to realize. So the combination that brings evolution is being blindered, and by that I mean sort of in a way being ignorant and being in this bubble of what you love and what interests you, and then letting outside forces keep banging on that bubble or popping the bubble and saying, actually, no, it's not like that. And it's like this. And if you keep letting people in and allowing a little bit of that discomfort, then I think evolution might happen. It might just happen without you even really being comfortable with it or being saying that that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, in a way, I feel that evolution in a musician, in an artist's life, it comes through ignorance and openness both.
I mean, if you could see me, folks, I've got like a grin, standing from ear to ear. Wow. I'm so glad I asked the big question to begin. Thank you for putting it so wonderfully. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. It's this very enriching, I would say, combination of being ignorant and then being open to learn. Otherwise, how else are you going to survive in this world, let alone music industry? And that's exactly what I've picked up on following your journey, and in particular, the way you talk about your music, I find most fascinating because you're very, very conscious of what you do. And having said that, I've been really dying to ask you this next question as well. So, as we both know, whenever people refer to singers as vocalists, we're either pegged as, like I just said, vocalists who are versatile, this word has been passed around a lot, or singer-songwriters. And then you've got this unseen category of vocal composers. So I wonder, what does that all mean to you, or do you even care about those terms? Like, how does that apply to
Right.
you?
The labels are interesting and so limited, but in different genres that I seem to go between, because I work in classical music, which is sometimes adjacent to the choral music that I c am commissioned to write. There is obviously in that world a lot more solidity to the moniker, to the label of singer composer. But when you step outside of that circle of singers, there is a great deal of prejudice and misunderstanding about, about what a singer is capable of doing.
Exactly.
And the structures that we're capable of sort of hearing and creating. And I know you've had a wonderful Kate Smith on
Yes.
this podcast as well, and I loved the way you both conversed about the ability for I think singers and instrumentalists who improvise are often a somewhat different creature than a singer-songwriter. And you talked about the idea of composition coming into a fixed form.
Yes.
Versus a composition that keeps on evolving and changing in the present of a performance or even in practice. So there's these two ways that I like to challenge the people that I work with to think about singing, because singing is so embodied
Yes.
and so personal. It's our personal voice coming through. And at the same time, we have this ability to compose and perform within genre. And so I think this is kind of a very roundabout way of answering your question, but I think the moniker of singer-composer should be used for instrumentalist composers as well. Like pianist-composer is a usual one, but the saxophonist-composer, right? And so that there's a more full-bodied sense of where that person is coming from. And then lastly, I would say that the idea of composing, kind of circling back to that idea of do we make fixed music that is supposed to sort of remain as it was put on a recording, or do we make music that's always in evolution depending on who we're with and where we are? And I like to be in both scenarios. And so I'd love to talk to with you about that, as you are a songwriter and a singer and a composer, because I think it's okay to travel between those fixed and non-fixed ways of creating.
Thank you for that. Thank you for all of that. And you've just answered my next question, actually,
Okay.
segued into it beautifully, as I knew, as I predicted you would. Because I've often, like yourself, struggled actually with the notion of trying to explain my many roles or my many hats, and not even wanting to call them as such, because like you said, the voice is the most vulnerable, truly, of all instruments. It's an embodied instrument, as we discussed with yourself and with lovely Kate Smith, if you're listening. And it's something that I've always found kind of frustrating at times when working with instrumentalists who just refuse to acknowledge it. But I think we're making headway. I think that,
I think so.
yeah, I think so too. I mean, your music, for instance, has been covered instrumentally as well. I've heard it in actually, I wanted to tell you, because I was just on tour, and I was, when they asked me to play music in between like the set, the break. I played your album actually. Yes, Sands of the Horizon. I
Oh,
was like, oh, I know what
wow.
album to play. And
Wow.
I remember the reaction I got. I think the coolest reaction I got in France was, what kind of music is this? This is so interesting. I've never heard it before. What is this? It's like one voice, two voice. And you know, and I thought, how interesting that a country like France, that, you know, I find that, you know, the history of France and the troubadour tradition and the early music, like, they would, one would be familiar with that kind of thing. But then I realized that the particular person who was asking me, he was just, who's a new fan of yours, he was like, oh, it's because I grew up with troubadour music that I'm trying to figure out if there's a link. And I go, yeah, absolutely, there's a link. So it's just like you said, that's why I like how you're referred to as a song collector. And sometimes, you know, most of the time, as a true artist that you are, you reinvent yourself. That's why I feel that you've used everything, you continue to use all the knowledge you've acquired stemming from back when you studied medieval music to now. And you know, spiraling between the worlds and traveling, as you say, of jazz, of neoclassical, of everything. And I think there, you know, I'm hoping that we're not going to use that. Maybe this is just a fantasy of mine, that we're not going to use the word genre anymore. We're just going to say music. I don't know. I
I would
think,
love
me
that.
too. It would make things so much easier for us. Maybe a pain for journalists, but it's okay. They can get used to it. But I digress because I knew this would happen with you. I'd have all these questions, and then we'd go off into more interesting
Other zones.
other zones, other zones. And so I think, before I play a track of yours, and I'll introduce the track, and I'd love for you to just briefly tell me about it. One thing in particular, I think, speaking about roles and responsibilities as artists, as vocalists, I've noticed, and you've been very open about it, your role, I would say, it almost seems synonymous with who you are as a person, your social responsibility to address things that are happening in this world. And you know, as Nina Simone and countless other people have said, that if we're not going to reflect the times, then who else is going to do it for us? And I can see that your music is really so poignant because it's not, I wouldn't say it's the kind of music that's just, you know, in terms of like the, I don't want to use the word activist, but you know, it is a form of a peaceful activism. And what I love about your music is that you have to listen to it again and again and again to really understand all the depth and all the emotions you're feeling about a particular issue. And I think there's something so powerful in that because it's almost timeless. And that's how I felt about your track, which we're going to play, called John O'Dreams, released in early September in your upcoming album and book, The Rhizome Project. And I've just recently heard Mora play with the Rhizome Quartet. It's just such a stunning collaboration. And you say that you've threaded in this track Palestinian American poet Naomi Shihab Nye's words into this old song with your friends Sumar Taha in Ramallah, Palestine, and Deborah Felmuth of Damascus and Vermont. So just talk us through it. It's such a beautiful track.
Thank you. I love that you say this about the layers of a feeling behind activism and behind music. And I feel that music holds both healing and that reflection of the thing needing to be healed. So the difficult things that we're grappling with together in our human world. And so when I was singing, I've sung John O'Dreams for years, and it's kind of a classic in the folk world. It was written by Bill Caddick. It came out of the melody is found in a Tchaikovsky symphony. So there's this sort of rich intermixing of classical music and folk music. His lyrics are about the equalizing power of sleep that we all, no matter how powerful, how what age, anything about us, we all sleep. And in fact, all creatures sleep. And So there's something so egalitarian in this song already. And
Hmm.
then I wanted so much to respond and reflect to what's happening in this in the world in the Middle East with Palestine and to send my heart there and to send healing to the children there. And so I boldly reached out to this wonderful poet, Naomi Shihab Nye, to ask if I could use this poem within and thread it between the verses of this song. So she amazingly said yes. She's a complete superstar and just the most gracious person you could meet. And then lastly, I will say the person who sort of guided me across the border between Israel and Palestine was Samar Taha, and so I really wanted her voice to be there in this track, and as with and same with Deborah, who has opened worlds to me. So it just felt like this really layered way to say my piece about what's happening in Gaza and in the world of war in general. So here it is, Jhana Dreams.
Thank you. Have a listen, folks.
All night.
All night, someone is trying to tell you something.
To tell you something.
The voice is a harbor.
The voice is a harbor. Pulling you from underneath.
Pulling you from underneath.
Where am I?
Where am I?
You say.
You say.
What's this? And who are you?
Comes good people home, we tread. Seek now your blanket and your feather bed. Warm is the rover, her journey's over. Yield up the dark to old John of Dreams. Yield up the darkness to old John of Dreams. Across the hills, the sun has gone astray. In old John of Dreams. dreams come winging clear. The hawks of morning cannot harm you here. Sleep is a river, frozen forever. And for your boatman, choose old John of dreams. And for your boatman, choose old John.
In the morning,
you are awakened
by gulls
flapping
at the window. They want you to feed them.
They want you to feed them
all day.
All day you break bread into small pieces, becoming the tide, covering your straight, clear tracks.
I mean, if it was up to me, folks, I would kind of stop the podcast there. It's just too powerful. And I mean that in the best of ways. Very, very relevant to what's happening. And as Maura and I discussed, you know, not even if we weren't somehow connected to the region, which we are, our roots, that is, that we would still feel the same way. And I think, as you said, if music isn't there to heal, you know, what is? So thank you for that. Moving on to other musical traditions, I love the fact that, and I hear this in your music all the time, actually, I would say both in your solo albums and in your lovely collaboration with Voco, your own group, the fact that you've studied vocal traditions from Eastern Europe and Irish Shanos, which I'm particularly fond of. And I think those folk traditions in particular are just very, if you exclude, of course, the African regions and other regions, they are quite unique in the fact that they always have this deepened sense of connection to the spiritual world, and which seems to be a recurring theme for you. And I love that. And I'm going to, before we play your next track, and I know it's great that we both felt that, oh yeah, we should play this next track. It's Silver Lake, basically.
Yeah.
To play Silver Lake, which was our connecting point. I should say, folks, that Maura very generously gave us the green light, gave Kate to head this project of covering Silver Lake with other beautiful singers, and I'm very, very grateful we did. And in this track alone, Silver Lake, it's, even if I didn't know what it was about, it's, when I heard it for the first time, I could hear this connection to all those traditions. Yes. I know that the original text, right, was by Charles Wesley, but I love your modified, enhanced version of it.
Thank you.
And it's from, and again, I love how you describe it yourself. It's from and I quote, the twilight hours of introspection and the truth of something that wrestles into you. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, going into the unknown. So even your themes of, if we go back to the beginning of this lovely podcast, how you say that you need to relearn what you thought you knew, it's in there too. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you achieve all these crazy layers of musicality and harmony and everything, but for me it's just wonderful. And and I just wondered, in a phrase or two, of course, my pleasure, if you could talk to us about your work with Voco, and describe for songwriters out there how, if there is a sort of general process that you go through to come up with these insane harmony lines, I'd love to pick your brain about it.
Thank you for asking that. Voco has been a long-term project with several members coming through, and that song Silver Lake got recorded by a really special quintet, and the process of making harmonies like the ones in Silver Lake is actually quite a personal process. That was a composerly process in that it was mostly me sitting late at night in my apartment in Los Angeles in the Silver Lake area, kind of fitting these lyrics and harmonies together. But what I found in the process of recording with this quintet, which was the recording that you heard and then so beautifully did a video of with Ben and Dom and Kate, was that process also found what phrases worked and what phrases didn't work. And then I molded those into, from working with actual people, molded those discoveries back into the music. And I think that's my favorite process, and a process that I want to be part of as a singer, not just as the composer. Like I will love doing that with composers, and composers who are in a state of curiosity about where the song will take them when done with other bodies and other brains.
That's incredible. I love listening to your process, and I feel like what really resonated, and actually I think is a great piece of advice for vocalists, vocal composers, as you say, as we say, is the fact that when we compose a piece of music with harmonies for, a quintet or quartet or trio or whatever kind of setup, it always helps to think of how we would sing it ourselves, not just how we imagine it, the end result of how we would approach it as a singer. And sometimes, dare I say, it's really great to experience it as an audience member, and not sing it in yourself when you go through that process. I know that myself, even on this latest album, I tried to, I went for the big sound, which I normally don't do, and all because I was trying to imagine how audiences would react, which I find very similar to how, you challenge your own self with these compositions. And I love your collaboration with vocal, and I'm going to just allow people to experience some of the magic that we got a chance to cover. So this is Silver Lake, taken from the album In Our Voices. Have a listen, folks. Welcome back, folks. I'm just going to go ahead and say that Maura and I agree that, you know, these podcasts, maybe I'll have a think about extending the time just because there's so much to talk about.
Yeah. But it's also great. I love that you have kept it to this time, and it makes the conversation kind of have this excitement and spark. Because I also know that I have to try to be succinct, which I don't succeed in doing.
No, you the opposite. It's I think when I was approached last year by lovely Fiona Ross to do this at this podcast, like she knows me quite well in the sense that she knows I'm a chatterbox, and I think that's a compliment, you know, because I love talking, and I love talking about music and what inspires us to live in music. And yeah. So I did warn her lovingly. And I said, okay, I'm going to have to try to not talk as much, and I kind of want to give the space to artists. And she goes, yes.
Right.
So having said that, I can't believe we're near the end now. I will say that as a self-made, that's how I view you, as a self-made, truly unique vocal artist. I know we touched upon this at the beginning, but I wonder, how do you go about performing and adapting your many roles, for instance, when you're on tour or when you're teaching? And the reason why I ask this is because this is fast becoming the trend for performing teachers, I would say. Mm-hmm. Whenever we're touring, we give workshops or what have you. So I wonder, what's that experience been for you, and how would you describe it?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. And I, again, enjoyed how you and Kate Smith spoke about it. For me, that's always been the case. I have always toured and taught. So I've always performed and taught on the same tour. And there is a little bit of stress that goes with it, because they're both performances in a way, teaching and performing, but they are really quite different hats. I only knew the pleasure of staying under one hat when I started performing with other bands a lot, because yes. Then I was just performing, and you become really good at just doing that. Mm-hmm. And you get to hone that skill. But, you know, my passion is to share this music with others, and I also delight in being able to work with an orchestra one night and be their singer for that night and wear a big gown. And then the very next night I go to a multi-generational choir, ages 8 through 80, and I've written a piece for them, and I help to teach it. We think of ideas on the spot. So this kind of combination of roles in my life makes me feel alive, even though I do see how it sometimes makes me a little less in my bones, in my body, when I think especially doing performance, because there are only so many hours of the day. So if I'm being real with you, Lara, it definitely feels like something I must do. I will always have that combination of being a touring, teaching, performing person.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I acknowledge the difficulties in trying to do them both at a high level.
Yeah. And thank you for saying that, because I'm glad you did, because it's not something that, you know, we want to admit, not we as in you and I per se, but I know that, for instance, I've seen, which is quite interesting, I've seen very commercially quote-unquote successful vocalists who turned to a full-time, you know, career of being a vocal coach, and I forgot who it was, but I really liked how she responded, which is similar to what you said actually, when she said that, I don't know why people ask what happened, or I don't know why people ask, like, why do you not go back to performing? Why are you a vocal coach? And I feel like saying, and her, you know, I had my own reaction to it, but her brilliant reaction was, because that's the path of music. It's always going to bring you places. And if you can't understand that it's a life choice, then Don't even try to give your two cents. And I love that, because I think that very, very few of us in the, I want to say, classical jazz and folk worlds, do we fully want one thing. I think we want a bit of everything, and such is life, you know, not to get such all philosophical, life. But that's part of the fun. It's also stressful, as you said.
Yeah.
Because like you said, like for instance, I was very happy to just focus on performing in this tour, and I didn't have to think of teaching. But I know, speaking of tours, that you've got an incredible dates coming up, and I wonder, so you've got an Australian tour, I know.
Mm.
And I also know that you've got another project, your album, which we touched upon earlier, the Rhizome Project. Mm. Could you just say where people could find out where you're playing and where they can listen to your albums?
Of course, yeah. It's, you know, like my name.com is where all of that information lies. And yes, I'm going on a tour in Australia that is a combination of performing and teaching. And mm-hmm. It's a place that I'm returning to.
Nice.
And so much about touring in my world is about relationships and relationships over a long period. So I'm really proud of that, and that I can continue to be useful in my community of musicians, and come and be with them in that way, through teaching, but also through performing. And I think the thing that I wanted to say about the Rhizome Project, which is my latest sort of offering, is that it's a book and an album together, because I also realized how I'm shaped by the people I come home to. And as a nomadic person, as a person who kind of leads an unusual life, I sometimes feel like an outcast, or like I'm never going to fit in where I am. Mm. But in fact, a lot of people feel that. And so to acknowledge how we are a fabric was important to me. Mm. And so that's what the Rhizome Project has ended up being about. And sometimes, you know, you don't know that at the beginning of making it happen, but it becomes clear. Yeah. So that's part of this last set of this last conversation, or this album, I think, represents the combination of things that we do in a very honest way for me.
And I agree with you 100%. And it's perfect how you just naturally segued into this as well, because the last track I've chosen to play is from your upcoming beautiful project, Mourning Dove. And you say that this original song speaks about learning differentiation and intimate relationships inspired by a pair of mourning doves. That's perfect how you segued into that, because you're right. Who we are on the road, who we are on stage, who we are, you know, in front of our loved ones or just a complete stranger, we're constantly having to reinvent ourselves, and that can be exhausting. And sometimes you have to sort of grieve and give way to who you are, however uncomfortable that may lead you to feel. I am so grateful for such a beautiful, beautiful conversation, Maura. My goodness me, the time has flown.
Likewise.
Thank you. I feel like we've been talking for 5 minutes. How is this 40? I don't get it.
I know. I agree. This has been such a pleasure. And I've so loved hearing all of your episodes. Go listen to every single one, everyone out there. Yeah.
Thank you so much. That's so kind. I'm going to leave you folks with Maura's track. It's just, again, incredibly beautiful, called Mourning Dove. Thank you for coming on The Notes Between. It's been an absolute delight. And thank you so much for tuning in, folks. This is The Notes Between, a songwriting podcast featuring incredible female singer-songwriters all over the world, hosted and sponsored by Women in Jazz Media. Thank you. Thank you.
to your side, wind around me as the snow flies, winter at my window. You wrap me in your solitude.
Solitude.